It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Lovers, thank you for waiting. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. This show is available as a podcast, and you can also get it via iTunes. Just showing up. Fresh,
yes, sir.
Kobe Slagle, working the board. Also just showing up, Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap and author of Reeling Backward.
Hello.
It's been a busy day, crazy day. Today was the holiday party, or Christmas party. So I worked the board. Someone has to be on the air.
Somebody's got to do it.
But I did get the food. Food was good. Mm-hmm. But yes.
What'd you guys have?
We had the catering.
There was food everywhere as if the party was catered, and it was catered.
It was catered. We had ham and turkey, and I'm a mashed potatoes guy. I'm sorry. No disrespect towards stuffing, but you know what?
They're really good, too.
As the kids' film correspondent has now realized, mashed potatoes are always better with cheese and bacon, as well it should be.
Bacon tastes good.
Bacon does taste good. Sewer rat may taste like pumpkin. Nah, anyway. So anyway, it's just been that kind of office party day here at the station. Except here, because we have movies. Movies are opening. The grown-up movies are in full swing. In fact, I want to thank the City of Indianapolis, the Marion County judicial system for keeping me from seeing so many movies this week. My wife was on jury duty. Hello, Lynn. But I think we were talking off air, Chris. I think, let's see, there were two on Monday, three on Tuesday, five, one Wednesday, I believe, one Thursday.
And one today.
So eight screenings in 1 week.
Yeah,
this is what we do for you people.
And that doesn't include the DVD for your consideration screeners that we've been getting, which adds, I think, another eight movies to the mix. It's
yeah.
pretty crazy.
It's been a very big... We have a very clandestine meeting on Sunday of the Indiana Film Journalists Association, AKA Doughy White Guys in Glasses and Gina. So... we'll let you know about that.
Stay tuned
next
Monday
week.
For the awards.
Yeah, go. You can go to. You post it on the Filmy app, right?
Or we'll have it on the Filmy app. We do have a film site now for the Indiana Film Critics Group, which no one can seem to remember.
They won't. Well, it's because you guys won't let me write on it.
I think it's indiecritics.org. I may be wrong about that.
Well, that and I kept trying to link it to the Ingrid Pitt fan page, and that's you know Bob Bloom would be the only one that would enjoy that.
Yeah.
So and maybe Kobe.
They should be pretty excited. I think maybe the New York critics might announce Sunday, but I think other than that, I think we'll be the first regional critics group to come out with their awards.
There you go. And we still stand by Up in the Air, at least at that time, sort of.
Yeah.
And as we remember, no blood is no movie is worth spilling blood over, at least not yet. We'll find out. So, all right, opening in theaters is, this was a film that was supposed to open last week, but for some bizarre reason, it showed up this week, finally, and it's the latest from Darren Aronofsky, who's given us everything from such uplifting, truly moving fare as Requiem for a Dream, The Wrestler, The Fountain, and Pi, among others. It's Black Swan, and it has Natalie Portman and lots of ballet dancing. Steady, Kobe. Hit it.
I'm okay.
I know you are.
I had the craziest dream last night about a girl who was turned into a swan. But her prince falls for the wrong girl, and she kills herself. He promised to feature me more this season.
Well, he should. You've been there long enough. And you're the most dedicated dancer in the company.
Our new swan queen, the exquisite Nina Sayers.
Lily, you're going to be amazing.
I watch the way she moves. Sensual. She's not faking it.
Seduce us! Attack it! Attack it! Come on!
Where'd you get these?
It's nothing.
You sweet girl.
Feel my touch. Respond to it.
It's almost hot for teacher. I don't want to talk about that.
Maybe we need to relax.
It's the role, isn't it? It's all this pressure.
I knew it'd be too much. I knew it.
What's she doing here? He made me your alternate.
The only person standing in your way is you.
How do you know where I live?
I have my ways.
She's after me.
Nobody's after you.
Please believe me.
Sweet girl. Sweet girl.
What happened to my sweet girl? She's gone.
After watching this, it felt like it's a companion piece to his last film, which was The Wrestler, my pick for best film of 2008, that's right, and meaning it really taps into, one, it taps into a world that's maybe a lot of people don't know about, but I think they capture a lot of the inner politics, turmoil, and the overall theme. Now, of course, with The Wrestler, it was pro wrestling. This is ballet, the cutthroat world of ballet dancing. You know, Portman's character is up for the title character in Swan Lake, and as you can tell, she's lots of stuffed animals in the room, lots of stuffed animal symbolism there. I'm not sure if the director, played by oily Vincent Cassell, who's had a really good year, by the way, doesn't know if she can tap into her dark side, and then Mila Kunis shows up, and, well, there's a dark side right there, not to mention Barbara Hershey. But it's one of those films that, for me, taps into the psyche of a dancer. It's very, like I said, it's very competitive, very cliquish, and there's this constant berating of making yourself thinner, making yourself lighter, making yourself better. And about near half, if not a third, halfway through the film, you start to wonder how much of this is in her head or not. It's one of those, it could be, is she insane or is it Memorex-type pictures? So I think Aronofsky captures that really, really well. Now, on the Film Yap, you and Joe Shearer, man we love dearly, apparently you two had a throwdown of Bobby Flay-like proportions. So, Chris, the floor is yours. Apparently you're in the minority on this one.
I freely admit it appears that probably 80% or more, maybe even 90% or more of critics are liking this movie and in many cases loving this movie. And I didn't dislike it, but I very much was disappointed by it. I found it very theatrical and full of artifice, which is to say it seemed artificial. It seemed like that Aronofsky was putting all of these barriers between the audience and what was going on screen that made me, at least, not buy anybody as a real character. I mean, the only defense I can give to Aronofsky in this is that he was going for that, is that he was trying to essentially, you know, do sort of, as I said, a blender puree of the Tchaikovsky ballet, you know, set in modern times, so that in that sense, each of the characters was not so much an individual as an archetype.
The oily director, the new competition in town, you know, domineering stage mom.
The domineering stage mom, and, you know, and then the character played by Natalie Portman, and I thought, you know, Natalie Portman did as good of a job. I think she did a great job acting what was, you know, on the screenplay and what the director wanted of her. But, I mean, I just did not buy her as a real character, as, you know, I mean, essentially someone who is so repressed and so interior, literally as if she stopped growing at age 8, both in her tiny body and also her mind.
What, didn't you see all the stuffed animals in the room?
Yeah. By the way, it's the flip comment I made about the movie was that I said it's Ingmar Bergman's Persona, you know, mixed with a little Fight Club, pressed through the sieve of, you know, like a high school drama class with all sorts of love triangles and personality conflicts.
Yeah, but I don't know too many high schools that have a scene with the black swan doing unspeakable things backstage. I don't think I'm giving too much away on that, but, that's I think a high point on, is this all in her head?
Yeah, and I think, you know, because they're so upfront about this, I mean, we're not giving anything away that's not in the trailer, is, you know, it quickly becomes this guessing game of what is real and what is not. You know, are there characters that are actually real people or just figments of someone's imagination and so forth? And I've heard all sorts of interpretations. I've heard a very convincing one that the Barbara Hershey character, the stage mom,
mm-hmm.
is a complete figment of Nina, the main character's imagination, that she's actually living in her apartment by herself and has the stuffed animals and, you know, clips her own.
Stuffed animals also pay rent.
Yes. You know,
'cause it's a New York City apartment.
And obviously, we're not going to give away the ending of the movie, but I don't know. It just did not work for me. I mean, because the characters were so much an archetype, I didn't buy them. And the Mila Kunis character, and I'm going to get a little nasty here. You know, Mila Kunis, you know, has done some comedy, that 70s show. She does the voice of Meg on the Family Guy.
She'll always have Family Guy.
I think you know, with that you know, creaky yet innocent voice of hers, croaky yet innocent voice of hers, you know, she does well with comedy. I think with straight, hard, dramatic material, I don't think she's very good. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if you saw her in Book of Eli last year, I mean, she was awful.
Well, that's a silly movie.
It is a silly movie, but
because,
you know,
the only, if you think about it, the only dramatic stuff I can think of off the top of my head are The Book of Eli and Max Payne. That's not real challenging stuff there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think other than just because of the way she looks, that she's, you know, a tiny little person who looks like she could be a ballerina, I think, and that she sort of looks like Natalie Portman's evil twin cousin or something. I mean, I think she just got cast because of how she looks. I don't think she pulls off the material. Her whole character makes no sense. I mean, this idea of I'm you know, the free, casual person coming into this high, intense situation, and I'll just cool out with everyone. And she keeps making these overtures of friendship to the Natalie Portman character over and over, which are completely rebuffed and given these weird responses. There's no way any rational person, real person, would keep trying to be friends with someone who clearly is not receptive.
Would you like to borrow my copy of All About Eve?
I just saw that, and I think it's in my book. Actually, I have a write-up about All About Eve.
You mean Recycling Backward? Right here in my right here in my hands.
Yeah. But anyway, so, I mean, this is the movie Black Swan, I think, is going to be the real one. I freely admit, I think I'm going to be in the minority, but
yeah, you are.
I didn't hate the movie. I thought it was a beautiful movie to look at. I did think Natalie Portman's performance was strong, but it just didn't work for me.
But I think all the stuff that you're talking about, it did work for
me.
And I, you know, just like I keep going back to the wrestler comparison. And by the way, there's a shot near the end of the film where I think a lot of people, at least I did, was, oh my god, are you really going to end the film exactly like you did the wrestler? He doesn't, and I'm not giving anything away.
Yeah.
But the fact that for guys, it's this stage, it's the wrestling ring, it's soap opera for men, and for a lot of women, especially those that took dance classes, and as the kid film correspondent has taken dance classes, it's that stage doing this production, yeah, you know, or some major ballet performance of some kind. So I think just like Fosse made the anti-musicals with Cabaret, with Sweet Charity, with All That Jazz, I think Aronofsky is kind of doing the backstage drama in this case, with obviously a lot of dancing and black swans doing unspeakable things and a little drug use. So
a little bit. Although people are making up a lot about the, you know, the sex scene between Mila Kunis and Natalie Portman. Which
did you hear that, Covey?
Yeah. To quote myself from my review, you know, I said the actresses elevate coyness to comedy with the most carefully framed shots in this movie.
Oh yeah, otherwise it would have issues. It would have rating issues like the Ryan Gosling picture.
Well, remember what was that movie with Kevin Bacon? Was it Wild Thing?
Yes, where you saw Kevin's bacon.
Yeah. But remember, there was the three-way with Charlie Sheen's wife, whose name I can't remember.
Denise Richards, Nev Campbell, and Matt Dillon. Notice how
Matt
that
Dillon,
quickly
right.
Rolled off. And you saw Kevin's bacon later in the scene.
Right, but you had that famous three-way where one person keeps her clothes on. You know, people were like, wow, I've never heard of a three-way where one person keeps all their clothes on.
This
is a two-way with Nev Campbell.
And this is a problem. How? I'm kidding, of course.
I just have a thing. It's like, if you're going to do a sex scene, do a sex scene.
Well, unfortunately,
if no one wants to take their clothes off, fine, I understand it. I wouldn't want to take my clothes off, but don't do a sex scene.
You got Ryan Gosling's movie, and there was Love and Other Drugs, and unfortunately, it's not 1973 anymore.
Yeah.
No butter.
Anne Hathaway, yeah, show it how it's done.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed it for all those exact same reasons, which happens sometimes. So it's agreeing and not disagreeing at the same time. Kobe hits Sir Ben's big response there.
Now that was a good movie.
Oh, no. More than that.
Yes,
more than that.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, no, this matter than that. Okay, also opening in theaters is Narnia, The Passion of the Lion. And
which we haven't seen.
Yeah, and they're older.
You didn't get to see it now either.
No.
They did not screen it for us because it's studio that shall not be named Fox.
Yeah.
They're very foxy. And they've, I don't know, we've been going back and forth with them. They actually screened like Love and Other Drugs and a couple other
right.
movies for us, but they did not screen this one.
However, we still like Michael Apted.
We love Michael Apted.
And we're waiting for 56 Up? Is that the next one?
Yeah. He's in his 70s, so we'll be interested to see how far that series
that's
goes.
A filmmaker I would like to keep working until he's in his 80s. At the very least, just to do that project.
And I hate to say it, but that is the sort of thing you could farm out to other people, you know?
No!
Send out a producer and a crew, and they can kind of...
Unless it's Larry Apted, but everything.
So we didn't see this, but there is reason for concern in that, you know, the first movie came out was a huge hit internationally. Second film still did very well, not as commercially or critically a success. And the creative team, the director, and the studio
shorter,
dumped it.
Cheaper.
Yeah, they dumped it and said, okay, and some other studio came in, bought it up, and is making a much lower budget version.
We shall see.
We shall see.
Because it's also up against a film. It just seems like the magazine covers were about the two actors than the film itself, The Tourist,
yeah.
with Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie. As apparently this is Johnny Depp's foray into the Alfred Hitchcock type thriller, Man Who Knew Too Much, North by Northwest.
Although very light. L-I-T-E Hitchcock, more to catch a thief.
It's a third less film than regular film.
Yes, but there's no serious people are going to die kind of stuff in this. You always know it's fun and games.
Yeah, he sees Jolie on a train, and they somehow get together, and she pulls him in the web intrigue, and for once Paul Bettany's not a hitman, although he is apparently a foil, and Timothy Dalton shows up. And
but, you know, he's the bad guy because he's blonde.
He's the bad guy because he's married to Jennifer Connelly. How many times do I have to correct you on this? But yes, I know. Well, at least he's not a hitman.
Now, you'll be interested to see. You know, this movie really hasn't gotten a lot of build in terms of advertising and stuff, but it has been a lot of press. Like you said, a lot
because of the two stars.
You know, two very sort of iconoclastic stars who have become very mainstream within the last few years. Coming together, meeting for the first time, supposedly, you know, when they started work on this project. You know, I'm curious to see how this movie will do. You know, a lot of people, you know, pasty, snooty, white guys like us, profess not to pay attention to box office.
And Gina.
I like to see, you know, how movies do, because I'm curious to see, you know, what's going to do well, because if something does really well, we're going to get a lot more of that.
I understand.
So they had a screening for this just last night. Always a bad sign when they will only screen a movie the night before it opens.
Although
they still had the security guys with night goggle vision.
Apparently this is going to be popular on East Washington Street.
Yeah. Just making sure that, you know, no one spills the beans about the movie 4 hours before it actually opens. But you can actually gauge the intensity of interest for a movie by these promotional screenings. Packed last night.
Of course.
The theater was absolutely packed.
Uh-huh.
And compared to some other stuff recently, not so much.
Okay.
So somebody wants to see it. I haven't checked it recently, but when I was adding my thing to the Rotten Tomatoes tomato meter, my vote bumped it from 16% up to 18%.
See, you're a troublemaker.
I am a troublemaker.
You crap on the auteur, and then you raise the level. So you're just a I think you do this just to irritate people.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean,
you're on Nixon's list.
Well, go to the Film Yap and read my review. I am probably, again, the outsider on this one. But and by the way, people have already told me that, you know, this was like literally the 12th movie in the last week that I saw and wrote a review of. It was late last night, and I was semi-coherent, and it's made for an interesting review.
So you do recommend it?
I do recommend it. I call it, it's a fancy Sunday. It's empty calories. But just
DAE, not
DAY. Just you know, enjoy the sugary rush and smile.
Okay, but not Jeffrey Rush. That was the Warriors way last week. Oof.
Jeffrey Rush was in the Warriors way.
Oh yes.
Oh, I didn't see.
Oh yeah, we'll get to that in a second. And I want it noted that the director who did this is his foray into Hollywood, because the last film he directed was the brilliant The Lives of Others.
Absolutely, Florian. Something Van Hammerschmark.
Isn't he the villain on Phineas and Ferb? Fights Perry the Platypus? No.
Yeah, so he made 2006, which won the best Oscar for a foreign language film.
And well-deserved, by the way. No,
fantastic movie.
Suck it, Pan's Labyrinth. And we like Pan's Labyrinth, but...
I actually like Pan's Labyrinth a little more, but this was a wonderful movie.
I had somebody, during the pledge drive... after that movie came out, and somebody said, I will pledge $100 if Matthew Soucy says on the air that Pan's Labyrinth is a better film than The Lives of Others. Guess what? We didn't get that $100. Sorry. I'll sell myself out to a certain level, and that's it. So, yeah, that's fun there.
Interesting thing. Again, go see my review. And several other people have commented on it. In this movie, there's this thing, literally, where we have lots of scenes. I think Gina Wagner, if you go to her Haunted Flower site, she's also come at this lots of scenes of Angelina Jolie walking by, and every single man in the vicinity,
and Burke Bacharach plays,
and a good chunk of the women stops in their track and turns their heads to just watch her go by.
In the movie, not in the audience.
In the movie.
I see. Trying to tell us something.
Something's going on there. Although, as I said, you know, watching Angelina Jolie is sort of a sustaining entertainment unto itself. I mean, if you made a movie that was just her at her house walking around doing chores and stuff, I'd probably watch it.
She does not have teddy bears in her bedroom.
No.
Billy Bob's blood.
Knives, yeah.
Yeah, but you wouldn't ask Tom Petty that question.
One more thing.
Please.
So did you see Salt, her big action film from
the
summer?
Yes, which I had some issues with.
Yeah. A lot of people did, but there's a scene very early on where she's at the CIA building and trying to escape from the CIA building because she's been found out as a double agent.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to go out on a ledge, and this is basically this scene where she's out there with a short skirt.
Yes.
And like just very leering shots of her legs.
Go
and,
on.
And people were like, oh, come on, this is ridiculous. Johnny Depp does the almost exact same thing.
In the exact same outfit.
Not quite, but the same thing. You know, get stuck out on the ledge, right. Not a lot of clothes. And yeah.
No, the issue I had, of course, with Salt was, and by the way, it's been a few months. If you haven't seen it yet, I can't help you. But if she did turn out to be a Russian spy, Glenn Beck would still be screaming about it to this day. because how dare one of the biggest Hollywood superstars be in a movie where they do actually play the quote-unquote enemy. That's why. So there.
Couldn't be like
No Way Out.
Kevin Costner in No Way Out.
I'm sorry.
I love the ending.
Yes, that was 1987, and Reagan couldn't remember anything.
He turns out to be a Russian spy.
That's right. And they're made from people there. Yeah, but yeah, last week because there was no Black Swan and there was no Tamara Drew, a.k.a. poster of the year, I had to see something for the program, so I saw The Warrior's Way. And the problem was, and I'm revamping the review last week, it wasn't silly enough, and it's a silly concept. It's cowboys versus ninjas, and it wasn't silly enough, and it wasn't grim enough, kind of like Faster. It just stuck in the middle. It didn't help that, you know, you've had the four ridiculous action films, even though you have a drunk, southern-accented Jeffrey Rush and Kate Bosworth throwing knives and Danny Houston sounding more and more like Dad as each day passes. Just not silly enough.
So was Danny Houston the bad guy in the movie?
Oh, of course he was.
Because Danny Houston
is the bad guy.
Danny Houston is always the villain. Always
the
villain.
Can you think of the last film that he was not? Anybody? Why am I asking you?
I don't know. You looked over here like
you don't even know who Danny Houston is, dude.
You are a... No, I have no idea.
He's the son of John Houston? He's the son of John Houston.
Okay.
You know who... Oh my God! Are we gonna have to add John Houston films to your to your list?
Yeah, I have not been. Oh man! I remember I told you I wanted to get through at least like one or two.
I know we'll get there. We'll get you there. So, but anyway, yeah, he's the bad guy in this one. All right, we're gonna take a short break because we need it, and we're gonna talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray, and we might have a small. Do we have a small brief update on what is Kobe watching or no?
We can.
You saw the one, right?
What?
One comedy?
No.
Well, you didn't.
We can talk about...
we'll talk about it during the break.
We can talk about the results of the fantasy football thing.
We already did.
Because we never talked about it.
Oh, we didn't? Okay. And we'll do that. And then a really good article in The Onion, the inventory about movie rating snafus involved. And it was written because of, well, Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams doing Black Swan-like things, among others. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point. And WFYI.org.
Good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones? All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap and Reeling Backward is here with us. Kobe Slagle, fresh from wherever you were.
It was a work-related thing.
Yeah, of course it was.
Mm-hmm.
How are the wings? And how were the wings? All right. Well, new on DVD and Blu-ray this week is a film that, well, you, sir, I remember in May, after Prince of Persia, you were asking, is this the worst summer films ever? And there was, well, a few exceptions to the rule. The biggest one for me is finally out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, Christopher Nolan's Inception, a cherry sundae on top of a big steaming pile of summer movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and one of those movies that I think is going to actually make a lot of critics' top 10 lists. I know it's going to make mine. Maybe even the top 3.
Uh-oh. So we're going to give you some audio of that, and then you can fix the microphone. Leonardo DiCaprio, and kind of almost like the Christopher Nolan players, Michael Caine, Ken Watanabe, Ellen Page, Cillian Murphy, Pete Postlethwaite shows up for a brief moment in time. That DiCaprio kid. And Marianne Cotillard, who's always nice to see in movies of any size or shape. Here's the trailer.
One thing you should know about me. I specialize in a very specific type of security. Subconscious security.
You're talking about dreams.
Mr. Cobb has a job offer he would like to discuss with you.
Like a work placement?
Not exactly.
You create the world of the dream. You bring the subject into that dream, and they fill it with their secrets.
Then you break in and steal it.
Well, it's not strictly speaking legal.
It's called Inception.
I'm ready. It's only when we wake up that we realize something is actually strange.
We have no responsibility. We are not prepared for this.
Dreams collapse. Have it under control. I need to see out of control.
You mustn't be afraid to dream a little bigger, darling.
Gotta love subtle Hans Zimmer did the score on that.
Yeah.
We were talking off air. If you get a chance, whether you like South Park or not, but the South Park episode that pokes fun of Inception is really, really funny. And every time the plot point is explained, there is a guy behind him doing that. Bah, 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 bah. Now, we've been up to our eyeballs in end of the year movies, and you know, people worry when a film is released in the summer or even further, like January, February, if it's going to make the best 10 list, there'll be no forgetting of Inception. And for the people who have not seen this in theaters, well, you know, sucks to be you. Hope you got a great system at home. The key to this film is to think of it as a heist movie.
Yeah.
Nothing else. I mean, it's when you don't need a roadmap to follow this. If you pay attention, you're going to be okay. But once, even when you get into dream within a dream within a dream, it's not the last two Matrix psychobabble films.
Right.
You can follow this. It does have a little bit of a heart as well with the DiCaprio character, especially with his relationship with Marianne Cotillard and the home life. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is in this film as well, I should say, but just a rock-solid cast. People want to work with Christopher Nolan, and it's fun to watch actors work with Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. And we should say that if you've seen the actual Blu-ray DVD combo pack release of it, it's really tons of cool.
Oh, gee, stuff. You mean they're not screwing you and then 6 months later throwing it out at you again?
Oh, no. It's crazy. There's just hours and hours of stuff, and it's really interesting. You know, I mean, Christopher Nolan talking about, you know, he was literally thinking about this movie, you know, before he made Memento even.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, when you're and kudos to Warner Brothers, because I've been hitting them hard lately with some of their issues is advertising and ideas, but this is a expensive grown up movie that they released in the summer, and I think this could have easily been dumbed down, and for the benefit of everybody, and the fact that Wachowskis aren't involved in this, it really, really, really paid off. So if you didn't see it in theaters, go rent it, or even better, go buy it, especially if you have that great sound system. So there you go.
Now that was a good movie.
No, it's better than that. Give us
yes.
Yeah, I don't have a rating system, but I know what sound cues I want. Let's see. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, Shrek Forever After, the fourth one. Did we need a fourth one?
No. Although I will say, it actually is.
You heard him.
It's an improvement over the third one. The third one was terrible.
Terrible.
This one is just merely okay.
Okay. But
no, that was a okay.
Okay.
Yeah, because we're too hip to say meh. Although that's been used as well.
You're so 1999.
Look who you're talking to. Jeez. All right. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Well, some of the I should add this to your account. Of course, I don't. This is a film where, yeah, really good original. Don't know if we needed a sequel. Big Bad Mama. That's Angie Dickinson for you, Mr. Slagle. Somebody from our generation.
Do I need to look her up?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Most definitely.
Wait, who?
Angie Dickinson.
Okay.
Are you? Wait. Oh, that's right. Because you love Soderbergh's Ocean's 11, but you've never seen the original Ocean's 11.
I try. I couldn't make it through.
You kids and your attention span and your energy drinks with booze in them. Jeez. You know, she was in the original Ocean's 11. Of course, she had a very brief, not even a cameo in the Soderbergh one.
And she was in Dress to Kill, which I always remember from about the age of 12. God.
And the best use of avocados ever. Also, Point Blank, which I might add to your account as well. You're on the Google page, aren't you, sir?
Yeah.
You all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just we'll talk a little bit and then, you know, get ready to return. But yeah, Big Bad Mama was her kind of foray into the B action movie back in the 74, I believe, with Tom Skerritt and William Shatner. And you get to see more of Tom Skerritt than, no, actually, ladies do like to look at Tom Skerritt, and some guys too. So
I should also mention a movie I've been looking forward to see. I never have is Kronos. It's coming out on the Criterion Collection.
It is out this week. Kronos. That's right. The film that started Guillermo del Toro's work in the business.
Yeah, it's interesting. When Pan's Labyrinth came out, what was that, about 4 years ago now, something like that.
Three years.
I just love the movie. But before that, I really had not liked
Guillermo del Toro.
I had not really liked his stuff, the Hellboy movies, but I hadn't gone back and seen like his original early Mexican stuff, and I finally got around like seeing The Devil's Backbone, which I just love.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been meaning to see Kronos for forever, so hopefully now I can.
There you can. It is out on Criterion, which means it'll be chock full of goodness. Also on Criterion, David Cronenberg's Videodrome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was very freaky, and I was in middle school, high school when that came out, and yeah, that's something you got to watch when you get older. So, and that's of course James Woods, Deborah Harry, and best use of stomach videotape action in there. Yeah. And, yeah, really, really bizarre stuff from David Cronenberg. But I think even bad David Cronenberg is at the very least fascinating.
Yes.
And this isn't bad. This is just kind of weird.
Yeah.
But those are also on Criterion. But, yeah, Big Bad Mama and Big Bad Mama 2, which was a sequel that Dickens started, in, I think, the 12, 13 years later, is out on DVD. Shout Factory put out the Bob Hope Collection, The Lemon Drop Kid, Road to Bali, Road to Rio, My Favorite Brunette, and The Seven Little Foys. You Bob Hope fans out there. Also from Shout Factory, because having two Angie Dickinson movies on one disc wasn't enough, two Cloris Leachman films, Crazy Mama, which I remember, if I remember right, was directed by Jonathan Demme.
Don't remember.
It's kind of a, it's another, it's like a Big Bad Mama version. It's a lady, you know, crime wave, only it's rated PG. And The Lady in Red, she plays the title character. It's another story, another variation of the John Dillinger story, shorter, better ending than Public Enemies. I like Public Enemies, except when it turned into The Passion of the Gangster, even if it was shot in Indiana. On Universal Blu-ray, Lost in Translation.
Oh, wow.
So you can get that great opening shot. And a film I still really enjoy, even if it is the male fantasy film set in Japan.
Yeah. And we should mention Sofia Coppola's new movie, Somewhere, probably the only contender out there that hasn't been screened for the Indiana Critics, so we don't know
what
to say. Yes, maybe you could have screened it for us.
Or at the very least, we'll be getting it in January.
February.
March. We're still waiting on The Messenger. Hit theaters. Sorry. That was the first of the nominated pictures that didn't come to town. So anyway, sorry, we're doing therapy here on film sociology.
In other words.
Yeah. Also, for you documentary fans out there and sports fans out there, Volume 1 of ESPN's 30 for
wow.
30 series. Yeah.
Does it have the Reggie Miller one on there?
Yes, it does. This
Winning Time.
If you go to Amazon, apparently the prices are pretty good for this collection, especially since it's the month of December and gives me...
I've only seen a couple of these, but they've been fantastic documentaries.
I've not missed a single one.
The U was really good.
There's been maybe one or two that I wasn't crazy about, and everything else has been rock solid. Here's what we got. We got King's Ransom, directed by Peter Berg. Yeah, you can look up Gretzky's wife on Google as well. Just don't lend her money. The Band That Wouldn't Die, directed by Barry Levinson, which was about Baltimore Colts marching band.
That was a good one.
Yep, that was a good one. Small Potatoes, that was about the death of the USFL. As if you didn't hate... you didn't hate Donald Trump enough watching him in this, you just want to hit him in the head with a hammer or with Burt Reynolds. Muhammad and Larry, which was about the end of Muhammad Ali's boxing career without bias. Any Boston fan knows that's as tragic as they come. The Legend of Jimmy the Greek, another tragedy in a whole different way. The U, yeah, about
that
the horde of criminals that played football down in Miami.
That was so awesome.
Yeah, Winning Time, Reggie Miller versus the New York Knicks, The Guru of Go, No Crossover, The Trial of Allen Iverson, done by Steve James, who, of course, gave us the greatest sports documentary ever, Hoop Dreams.
Yeah.
You need 3 hours to kill, sir. But somebody's already borrowed my copy right now. Silly Little Game, which was one of the ones I don't think I was crazy about. That was, I think, the fantasy football, the history of the fantasy sports.
I miss that one.
Run, Ricky, Run, everybody's favorite pot-smoking running back, Ricky Williams. The 16th Man, Straight Out of L.A., directed by Ice Cube, which was about the L.A. Raiders and their impact, not just in football, but in hip-hop culture. And June 17th, 1994, a fascinating documentary. And you forget that these three things happen, and it's from the director of The Kid Who Stays in the Picture, and it's about all the events that happened in one single day. No narration. All news clips. It was the Masters. It was the NBA Finals. It was the Rangers, New York Rangers.
Stanley Cup.
And OJ and the Bronco.
Wow.
That's a busy day in the news world, folks. So anyway, all of those are in one collection. They are also available as separate titles, depending on ones you want to pick and choose.
You see the one about Vlade Divac?
I did.
That was a good one.
They've been really cool. I hope, hopefully they'll do more of these. Maybe not right away, but these have been really, really fun to watch.
Right, and probably what they spent to produce each of them was, less than one Monday Night Football segment.
Unless, and you know what? No. And without the Monday Night voices, because that's just... Can we get Gus Johnson on this?
No.
All right, we're going to take a short break. I'm going to talk more talk with Christopher Lloyd and an article in The Onion about film ratings that everybody should really just remind everybody that the rating system is flawed. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Not alone.
We got guests.
You got what?
Guests. Guests.
Guests.
Yeah, guests. People. We got guests coming over.
When?
Now.
Who are you?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Christopher Lloyd, Kobe Slagle hanging out with me near the holiday party edition of WFYI's Stuff in the Building. Chris, promote the Yap and the book.
Thefilmyap.com, where you can see, read views and reviews of movies and commentary and podcasts and video reviews and all sorts of cool stuff and free stuff galore.
Free stuff.
And my book is Reeling Backward, which you can download it off of Amazon.com, or you can buy a print copy at Lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com, Reeling Backward.
Very good. Okay, now there was an article in The Onion this week, and yes, the Onion AV Club, which is, I think, one of the best websites for actual information, and yeah, all the joke articles are fun too, but this week's inventory is called This Film is Questionably Rated, 15 Egregious MPAA Screw-Ups, and it was brought up because of the Ryan Gosling, Michelle Williams film, which we'll get to in a little bit, but here's what a list of the films they have talked about. And I'll read a little bit. But number one on their list is the film Once, which I remember was number two on my list of best films that year. And they write, in the early summer of 2007, two films were released with R ratings. One featured a scene where a naked woman is suspended from a ceiling while another naked woman slashes her with a scythe and bathes in her blood. The other featured two Dublin musicians singing songs together, falling in love, and opting not to act on it. In spite of their vast differences in content, Hostel 2 and Once both received the same rating.
All right.
There's that. Number two, The King's Speech, which you got to see on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yes, because, well, Colin Firth's character drops the F-bomb, even though it's a pretty clean costume drama about a man trying to not stutter.
Would have gotten a G rating if it wasn't for that one scene.
There you go. Number three is Blue Valentine. That's the Ryan Gosling, Michelle Williams film where they are, well, doing it. And but apparently, I haven't seen this film, but from what it's read, it's that they write. Apparently, audiences need to be protected from reality.
One is that?
Blue Valentine.
Oh yeah, it's really not that bad at all.
And by the way, they're married, so it's okay. Jeez. Number four, The Wild Bunch, which you just saw recently.
So
Kobe.
Awesome.
Yeah, and. By rubber stamping cartoon bloodshed and stigmatizing more realistic depictions, the MPAA, quote-unquote, protects younger viewers from the idea that violent acts have violent results.
Yeah, I don't know.
Turned a lot of ears and a lot of eyes when that came out in 1969.
I'm also critical of the MPAA system for various reasons. One is that everyone seems to think that it's a law,
it's
enforceable. I remember, you know, a million years ago when I was assistant manager of a movie theater, people would be like, you can't sell a ticket to him, he's only 12. And it's like, well, actually, it's not a law.
Yeah.
It's just a ratings guide.
Yep.
But I think, you know, it's very true that obviously they punish sex and nudity a lot more
time
than they do violence. But I've also seen a lot of movies over the year that got ratings that I thought was too light. We were just discussing the new True Grit, which was coming out, I think, Christmas Day.
It's Christmas Day.
Got a PG-13 rating, despite some pretty hard-edged violence. I mean, not, you know, it's not Hostile 2.
It's not the Wild Bunch either.
No, but it's pretty brutish some stuff. My favorite that I love to quote, you know, that going the other way, it was too light, is Jaws from 1975 with lots and lots of severed limbs and blood and... arterial spurting and naked swimmers, PG rating.
Well, they didn't, that's all they had back. Yeah, that's true. But you know what? Because it would only made $10 kajillion.
Yes.
As opposed to $100 kajillion. Number five on the list, Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song, which of course had the label rated X by an all white jury. Scary movie because there's an erect prosthetic organ, but it's funny. It's a joke, therefore you can get away with it. Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, kind of similar circles of that. Rushmore got an R rating for language and brief nudity. Longtime Companion, if you remember that, the excellent homosexual drama about homosexuals in 1989. Could show certain things like that. Number 10, Bad Education, Pedro Almodovar's melodrama. Number 11, Midnight Cowboy, the only X-rated film to win Best Picture. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's been toned down to an R. A lot of films that came out in the late 60s have had their ratings changed a little bit. And
Clockwork Orange for Best Picture.
That's right. Clockwork Orange was X, Midnight Cowboy is X, but it's on the video box as labeled rated R. And, of course, you and I will remember 1984, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and Gremlins. Gremlins just as disturbing as maybe it didn't have a heart being ripped out of somebody's chest. That got PG, and Temple of Doom didn't. Number 14, Mutual Appreciation. Number 15, Henry and June, the first NC-17 film.
Yeah.
And nobody saw it. So.
Yeah, well, you remember, people forget, you know, back in the day, X was not supposed to be explicit necessarily.
Nope.
It was supposed to be, this is a movie for adults and adults only. And for a very brief window of time, you know, you could actually have movies nominated for Best Picture and win Best Picture with an X rating. But, you know, then we had basically Deep Throat came along and the porn industry took off.
Well, that and the MPAA forgot the copyright.
Right, the X rating.
Way to go, smart guys.
And so this actually became a selling point in the porn industry. If this isn't an X movie, it's an XXXX movie.
Yeah.
And almost, you know, literally almost, you know, within a couple of years, the rating became, you know, like this verboten.
Right, and so then when they finally did get an NC-17 new rating NC-17, but the damage had already been done. Newspapers, radio stations, not here of course, and you know different media won't show or air films with NC-17 ratings.
A lot of stores will not carry videos with an
NC-17. Right.
A lot of theater chains will not show a movie with an NC-17, and so what ends up happening is they choose to just release a film unrated. I'm trying to think. The cook, his wife, the thief, and her lover.
I think
that was really released and rated, yeah. And that was sort of early 90s, and that started and ended the trend of people said, well, NC-17 isn't going to work, so we'll just release unrated.
Well, and then, you know, Paul Verhoeven really killed it when he was going to push Showgirls, and nobody saw it when it first came out. And now, it's like Hoosiers. Now everybody claims they saw it in theaters and loved it because it's a cult classic.
And now we've become this other trend has surfaced of, you know, it's become a whole video marketing thing of the releasing the unrated version.
Correct.
Online with, you know, 2 extra minutes of stuff. And usually when you have like a harder edge movie that's trying to say, oh, here's all the naughty stuff, it's really not that much naughtier.
No, not really. Not really at all. Hey, another film that's going to be opening up very soon, and of course you can hear a review of it on Fresh Air tonight, right after this program, The Fighter from David O. Russell.
Next week, I believe.
Yes. And as I was looking through your book, I love, 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 love that the first film in your book is 1972's John Huston's small near masterpiece, Fat City.
Yeah.
With Stacy Keach, and so you write that his character is 29, he looks double that.
Yeah.
Stacy Keach, young Jeff Bridges, and it really captures the world of small town, small time boxing.
Yeah.
And it's one of the minor films from John Huston, but so damn good.
Yeah. And I remember I wrote in that column, I said, and starring Jeff Bridges, who is quietly having himself one of the all time great film acting careers, and I wrote that
before Crazy Heart,
long before anybody even was saying anything about Crazy Heart, so I felt very good about that.
Yeah, we can no longer call him underrated.
Nope.
We've got an Oscar. And by the way, get ready for True Grit.
Get ready for True Grit.
He's in that one as well. But love that. And then, of course, Robert Wise's 1948 drama, The Setup, with Robert Ryan. And you're right, it's a good thing when Robert Ryan gets to star in a movie.
Yeah, he was one of those utility players that was in all sorts of movies.
He played Deke Thornton in The Wild Bunch, Kobe, just so you stay with us.
He was, this is a bad comparison, but his career was sort of like Paul Rudd, in that he was always perpetually a supporting actor, and, you know, at some point in his career, someone finally said, you know, this guy's really good, why don't we give him a lead role?
He also didn't want to hear Michael McDonald in the shop 24 hours a day, for you fans of 40-Year-Old Virgin.
The Setup, notable for, you know, people talk about High Noon 5 years later, I think it was 5 years later, you know, a movie that was told in real time, and The Setup did it before.
And it didn't have that damn song playing over and over and over. I'm not going to make you, I am going to make you watch High Noon one of these days, because I say it whenever I'm on the board.
Yeah, one of the things I was going through in the book is I really did want to, I mean, I do have lots of All About Eves and, you know, very high-profile movies, but I wanted to seek out older movies that perhaps their reputation had not held up over the years for whatever reason. And I, you know, there's a whole section of hidden gems like that.
And I just got done reading The Hill.
Yeah. Great Sean Connery movie from 1965. Absolutely bombed. No one wanted to see it because in 1965, if Sean Connery was not playing James Bond, no one wanted to see him in anything. And it's a great Ossie Davis.
Ozzie Davis is in that as well. Harry Andrews and Sidney Lumet, who, that guy is he's had at least one excellent film every decade since the 60s or 50s, since the 50s.
And he's still making them.
He's still, that's great to see. Yeah, and Before the Devil Knows You're Dead was also on my top five when that came out. But that's another one that's also on DVD. And it's funny, he and Connery worked together like five times. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting combination, but really, really good. So, but yeah, you can get Reeling Backward. How can I get to you for that? Because I know they're in the trunk of your car.
I do have just a few copies. I think two are left. So if you live in Indianapolis and want an autographed copy and save on shipping, just let me know. My ego swells every time I get to autograph a book.
Yeah, but you asked me if I wanted one, and of course what you scrawled in was great, and I will never share it.
But you can download
it. It's what Bill Murray whispers at the end of Lost in Translation.
Just go to Amazon.com and do a search for Reeling Backward, R-E-E-L-I-N-G, Reeling Backward, and you can download it there or get a print version at Lulu.com.
And you can hear the Black Swan Throwdown on the Film Yap website and podcast.
Yeah, that's a good one. We don't actually get nasty, but... Yeah.
And there's no Bobby Flay. So. So here's some words to live by.
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Chris, thanks for hanging out with us today.
My pleasure.
All right, on behalf of Christopher Lloyd, Kobe Slagle, I'm Matthew Soucy. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
This is WFYI HD2 Indianapolis, The Point.
From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli in for Terry Gross. On today's Fresh Air, we remember jazz saxophonist James Moody, who died yesterday. Moody became famous for his 1949 solo on I'm in the Mood for Love, which became the melody for a new song called Moody's Mood for Love. It changed Moody's career.
Well, if I don't do it to this day, people said I haven't been there. I mean, that goes to show you. Like, no matter how much I practice, if I don't say, there I go, or play, you know, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, then it's like I haven't been there.
Remembering James Moody. Also, Ray Manzarek, keyboard player for The Doors, explains what really happened at the 1969 concert where Jim Morrison was arrested for indecent exposure. Yesterday, Florida's clemency board granted Morrison a posthumous pardon for the incident. And we look at some of our favorite DVDs from the year, and David Edelstein reviews The Fighter.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. Former President Bill Clinton is throwing his support behind President Obama's compromise with Republicans designed to extend soon-to-expire tax cuts for all Americans. The two men spending time in the Oval Office with Mr. Obama terming it a terrific meeting, then turning the podium over to the former president who defended the tax-cutting deal to reporters in the White House briefing room.
The agreement taken as a whole is, I believe, the best bipartisan agreement we can reach to help the largest number of Americans and to maximize the chances that the economic recovery will accelerate and create